Hello there, this is Bane. When I'm not out on the streets of Gotham hunting the Batman, I find myself listening to Part-Time Fanboy on a regular basis. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at www.parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on the Twitter. Do it now, or I'll have to do something awful to your spine.
Part-Time Fanboy, and my name is Christian Horn, and I'm here with Corey Blake, and we are here with Patrick, is it Urich?
Yes.
Ah, I got it right the first time. All right, and you are in charge of a website called makingcomics.com, correct?
Yes, I am. I just got out of a meeting with my team as well.
And how do you and Corey know each other, first of all? Because Corey's the one who wrangled this thing together.
Corey, I think, go ahead, Corey.
I have a terrible memory in this sort of stuff, but I think we met at Google Plus, of all things, or through Google Plus. Is that right? And then
yeah, in the community forums, I think you posted that you were willing to do press for
that's right,
webcomic artist, and I was like, press.
Yeah, yep, for a few months, the Comics Observer, when it was active, was trying to cover webcomics and digital comics, and Patrick was one of the first people to enthusiastically respond to my call for people to give me something to talk about.
Oh, that's great. And so Patrick, you have a webcomic.
Yeah, at the time I was working on a webcomic called American Boom. Now I am working on a comic called My Arm the Comic, as well as I'm restarting Hipster Picnic. I just, there's some new content coming out in January, which is really cool, and I just got a ton of worldwide press for my tattoo, which is on my arm, which is a 4-panel tattoo, blank tattoo comic strip.
Oh, really?
And I fill it in. Yeah, I fill it in, I draw on it, and I basically went viral. I was like in Huffington Post.
That's awesome.
It was insane. But the latest one was I was in the Netherlands. I have a radio interview coming out in India soon. And yeah, it's been pretty insane.
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. I want to make sure I understand this. You put a 4-panel tattoo, a blank 4-panel tattoo, on your arm?
Yeah, on my left forearm.
On your
left? It has a word bubble in the first and fourth panel.
And that's so that you can draw your own comics in it, and then, like, with what? What would you draw?
I draw anything that comes to mind. It's, like, more of a creative prompt, and then I take a picture of it on my iPad, and I posted it up to my Tumblog at myarmthecomic.tumblr.com.
Oh, and then it just went crazy, like viral, like the Huffington Post?
Yeah, it went kind of nuts. I got contacted by a bunch of people. I've had over 32 articles written about my arm in the last 2 weeks.
Holy cow! You have to send me some of those.
They're all available on my site. You can see me. I was on the local news, too.
Are you serious? Like the LA news?
Yeah. I was like, they came over and filmed me drawing my arm comic, and like, it was hilarious.
Well, shit, man. I got a Star Brand tattoo at Comic-Con this year. It didn't get me jack squat. I didn't even get
it's funny because even before I started getting press and it got viral, I was getting people coming up to me like all the time and being like, yo, like, what's your tattoo? And then they'd be like, that's brilliant. And at Comic-Con, they were like, can I take a picture of your arm? And I was like, damn it, I work on my right arm to draw, like, all the time. My left is useless, and it's getting all the attention. And
wow.
I remember seeing that your Tumblr first go up, and I just thought that was such a fantastic idea. I loved it, and I immediately followed it. And I'm not surprised that it's getting that attention. It's such a clever, imaginative idea.
That is a brilliant idea, I will say. Very cool. But what would you use to draw on it? Like what? Like a pen?
I try everything but Sharpie. Yeah. Mostly because the Sharpie tends to not come off as easily.
Yeah.
And I wash my arm off like immediately after I take a picture because I'm like afraid of getting ink poisoning or something.
Could happen. That's cool. So have you guys ever met person to person, like face to face, or just online?
We met at Comic-Con. Yeah.
Right. We met at Comic-Con this past summer.
Oh, okay, cool. And how did you get into comics, Patrick?
I mean, standard story, but I'm from the woods in New Hampshire. I read a lot of Calvin and Hobbes and Newsweek political cartoons when I was a kid. And when I discovered that there were comic book stores when I was like 11 or 12, I started obsessing. And I decided that was going to be my career, and that was years ago. I ended up going to graphic design school to learn how to make comic books, and I hated graphic design, so I decided to become a teacher, an art teacher. Oh. That's how I got out to California. I moved out here to work at an art high school for the last 5 years, and I just recently quit my job to become a full-time artist.
Oh, wow. You're drawing your comics?
Yeah. I'm doing that, freelancing, you know, doing the odds and ends to keep afloat. I have an amazing wife, basically.
Oh, well, good for you. That's great. And so you're mostly, you've got two webcomics, and is that pretty much what your focus is on besides the website, besides making comics?
So there's makingcomics.com, which is a big nonprofit that's launching in January.
Yeah.
And there's my two web comics. I am working on a comic, longer form comic that's more autobiographical and a lot less funny, than my other stuff. And I have a side job where I'm designing, interactive educational, curriculum for online.
Oh, that's great. That sounds really interesting. I guess, so let's talk about makingcomics.com. Like you say it's a nonprofit, and what are its goals? Cause I went to the website and there's not much up there right now. It looks like.
Right. So Jason Brubaker started, makingcomics.com as an offshoot to his, now really famous, comic Remind blog. .com. Jason Brubaker created that about 5 years ago. He started working on it in the late 90s as an animation, and it got big, and he created a comic with the goal of creating a comic book for arts. And so basically it got really popular. He noticed a bunch of his fans were actually wanting to know how he made the comic more than they actually liked the comic.
Uh-huh.
So he created makingcomics.com. About this time last year, Jason did a Kickstarter that was about $107,000 Kickstarter for his Remind comic. And over the summer, he contacted me this past summer because he knew the work I was doing. I started a business in San Diego called Little Fish Comic Book Studio, which was a studio to teach students how to make art. And he was really impressed by my work. He contacted me and wanted to give me the website to take over.
Oh, wow.
And so hatched my schemes of like making comics 2.0. So for the past 5 months, I've been putting together a team of about 12 volunteers, people from all over the world who are working with me to create a website that's basically a one-stop catch-all for entry-level comic creators to learn everything that they need to know how to make comics. It's going to be comprised of articles and tutorials, and it's going to be pretty big. So it's been a lot of work, but that's why the website's a little bare-boned right now, because next month we're kind of doing a Google Hangout on Air to promote the new content that's coming in January.
Oh, great. And they can see the info for that at Making Comics, like the homepage.
Yeah, yeah. So the first entry on there right now is kind of the info for the Hangout on air.
Gotcha. Oh, and anyone can sign up to that as long as you've got a Google Plus account or something?
Actually, as long as you can see YouTube from your home computer, you can watch that because the live YouTube, it's just a YouTube, it's like a live broadcast on a YouTube channel.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's interesting. And so this is basically going to be like a hub for people to learn about making comics.
Right. Right. The Hangout on Air is more like a press conference that we're doing next month. And then we'll be rolling out content 4 times a week on a blog roll in January and so on and so forth until the end of time. But the big thing that we're trying to focus on is tutorials. We're trying to create curriculum and tutorials that can reach a worldwide audience and help people who right now can't learn how to make comic books without paying for it be able to do it for free.
Wow. I mean, this sounds really ambitious. I mean, Corey, do you have any questions? Because I don't want to feel like I'm hogging it.
Yeah, not at all. Yeah, I mean, I was really excited when I heard about this, and I know the work that you've done, Patrick, locally with kids and just people of all ages, teaching them how to make comics, which I love and just support wholeheartedly. I know that you're an artist. I know that Jason Brubaker's an artist. I know, you know, a lot of your team, you know, are cartoonists and artists, and you know, however you want to sort of splice the terminology. Do you have any plans? Is it primarily geared toward artists, or is it, you know, is it writers, is it colorists, is it letterers, is it all aspects of the sort of process of making comics?
That's funny, because that was definitely the meeting that I was just in, and basically, because I was explaining to my team that whole philosophy, because we're kind of making it up as we go. But I can definitely say that the focus at the base of everything is on entry-level comic creators, so people who don't know anything about creating comics. So we're really focusing in the next year on people who want to know how to make comics but have never known how to.
Right.
So I had to kind of tell my team, like, we need to dumb down our vocabulary because we're going to be targeting fifth graders and eighth graders and my mom, you know, like, because you know, when you're creating curriculum that way, when you're creating learning modules that way, you really need to create an all-inclusive environment. So we really don't want to be talking about popular things and the things that you see on every other website. This site is like, do you remember the feeling of reading Understanding Comics the first time, like Scott McCloud's
book? Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and where you were like, this is so brilliant, everybody should have done it. Like, it should have existed since the beginning of time, because it just makes that much sense. That's how we want making comics to be. Basic, like very basic, but also very brilliant in its adherence to that simplicity.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, and so this will be theoretically what, free to people who want to check it out? I mean, is there going to be a membership fee or anything like that?
No, it's going to be completely free. We're following the model of Khan Academy and Wikipedia, big websites that have done a lot for different industries, like Wikipedia, namely, did a lot for the information in general industry, and then Khan Academy's one that's done a lot for math education worldwide. There's nobody doing anything like this for art and art education, though, and I really see a hole in that industry because of that.
Wow, and so... Oh, go ahead.
Well, speaking of Scott McCloud, he actually did one of his sort of sequels of Understanding Comics was a graphic novel called Making Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sort of taking anything from that or using that as inspiration?
Yeah, for sure. No, it's funny because when Jason came up with the comic Making Comics, I think it was in 2008, and I don't know if he was very aware that there was a book, because the book came out in 2006. Right, so like they were very close together in creation. And actually, Scott, I know I've met Scott McCloud a couple times. I took his class 2 years ago, and we're not ever going to make money off of the name makingcomics.com. If we ever take donations or create a foundation, it's going to be through a separate the parent program, which is going to be called Panels, which is promoting artistic newness. It's something. It's like a long
it's like Shield.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
I was like, cool, we get to have Shield cards.
So
we're calling it the Panels Project, and it's going to be it's going to have a lot of sub projects to it as the years go on, but Making Comics is the definite first one.
Well, I mean, this sounds like a really great thing. When you're talking about comics, like, and starting with the basics, are you talking, because it seems like you're working with stuff on the web. This gentleman, Jason Brubaker, is definitely, I'm looking at his site right now, was working with stuff on the web. Is your goal going to be like web comics or print comics? Or
all encompassing. I know a guy named Dan Archer who does a comic called, a web comic called Arch Comics. And he's a brilliant, brilliant person. He's also a faculty member at Stanford. And he traveled. He was just embedded in Nepal for several months, where he was doing daily web comics on sex trafficking. And he was there, and they were based on interviews he was doing. And while he was there, he was teaching kids how to make comics. And what he found was that if he actually just printed, kids just like to make comics on copy paper. And it kind of brought me back. A lot of this brings me back to my roots as a comic book artist. And what did I want? Did I want to make money? No, I wanted to tell a story. You know, I wanted to when I read Calvin and Hobbes, I really identified with that. And I was like, I want to create something that makes other people feel this way. And I think at the heart of comics, that's what every comic creator wants to do when they first start out. And I think we're subdividing the website into three separate parts. There's going to be strictly Making Comics, which is going to cover everything from the DIY to Marvel Comics method of submitting work. And then the second section is going to be economics. So how do you make money off of comics? How does the industry currently make money off of comics? How does a Kickstarter work? And then the third section is going to be all based in theory. How do gender studies affect comic book creation? How does mythology and history and sociology, neuroscience, these are all theory ideas. So we're going to have three different sections of the site that all interact in that way.
And are you going to be going into stuff like anatomy, perspective, like the basics of actually illustrating, or is it putting together the comic once you sort of have a way to draw yourself?
That was the conversation that we just had. I think that's the hardest thing for anybody to tackle. But I can say that when I look at Khan Academy and I look at the Code Academies that have popped up, these free resources for people creating code and free and open source programming, people who are learning math, you really got to construct from the basics. And I think that. As hard as that is for an artist, because we always want to jump to style. We always want to jump to adhering to a style or creating a style or really orbiting and figuring out how to orbit a style. But those of us who've been drawing comics for a while know that that comes with a lot of practice and a lot of work. Mm-hmm. But the basic building blocks, the stuff that gets you started, those are simple. Those are anatomy. Those are perspective. Those are the fundamentals. And I think that there's a lot to cover in that.
Sure. Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, it sounds really, really great, especially, you know, the parts about sort of teaching people how to, I guess, make money off of their creation, because that seems to be, even with some professionals that I speak to, people who are working, you know, like for companies, you know, like DC or Marvel or... They seem so, it seems like such a big challenge to them to say like, oh, I'm going to put something online and I'm going to try and make money off of it. You know what I mean? That seems like a daunting task. And I know that even for me as someone who's wanted to do web comics or my own comics, you know, there's definitely a challenge because, you know, I have a family, you've got bills to pay, you know, stuff like that. So that, I mean, that, that, that's always sort of the biggest thing, at least in my head, which is like, not necessarily how am I going to make money off of it, but how am I not going to put myself into a hole of debt? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, and I can't remember the artist's name, but he just did a Kickstarter on a blog he does called Doodle Alley. Uh-huh. And it's a comic about sustainable creativity. Mm-hmm. And it really covers a lot of what you're talking about. But you know, I hear all of that too. And what's interesting is like, that was exactly the thinking behind my tattoo. You know, like, was like, how can I practice making comic books and merge it with the life that I realistically have to live? Because I'm not Bill Watterson and get paid to just make one Calvin and Hobbes strip for my entire day. You know, like, or, you know, Klaus Janson or any one of the big guys that they just get paid to work on comic book art. I don't. So with the tattoo, I had to really create this thing that took me 20 minutes or less.
Gotcha.
so I could promote myself, and it took, you know, it's cool that it took off. And I think that it's a lot of practice. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, we're not going to try and be prescriptive and say, you know, if you do these 15 tutorials as fast as you can, now you're a comic artist. I think at the end of the day, we're just saying, here's how to kickstart your imagination. And it's going to be a lot of work before you get to the part where you create something original, but it doesn't mean you can't do it.
Oh, that's great.
So what are the tutorials going to look like? Is it going to be videos? Is it going to be like what you're doing with Google Plus here? Is it going to be a live sort of a seminar or workshop? I mean, how is it being structured?
Well, we're trying to do a mixture of all different things. I have a podcast guy who's going to be doing what we're doing right now and talking to professionals. About, say, if we're covering penciling on bristleboard, we'll be talking to artists who specialize in that from all different walks of life. We'll be doing a hangout on air once a month. We'll have podcasts coming out four times a month on a topic that spans the entire month. So the first month is all ideation and getting started. So we have two articles coming out a week. We have two tutorials coming out that month. We're going to be ramping up the tutorials. The tutorials are going to come out a little bit slower because we're working really hard on creating a comprehensive style guide for that stuff so that we're consistent. Because at some point, just like Wikipedia, we're going to be opening this up to a lot of collaborators and people who are going to come in and start making tutorials for us because it's free. Like, I mean, we're not making money off of it either. So we're hoping we're going to start a movement of people who want to contribute to the project.
Oh, that's
interesting.
That's really cool.
So I love that it's a nonprofit, and I've actually been working with nonprofits now in my day job, in my secret identity. And and you know, you mentioned Wikipedia and that sort of thing, and you see them do annually fundraisers. Are there plans for fundraisers of any kind so that it is in some way, you know, self-sustaining, or at least can you know, like we're talking about, not go into debt for creating it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that when we can prove ourselves as a value to the community, which is probably about a year's worth of work, we'll probably definitely go to Kickstarter, and then we'll probably definitely go to doing fundraisers and things like that. When we look at Wikipedia, and when you look at Khan Academy and all these places, it took them a couple years to really build their foundation. And I think I knew that going into this project. Having done Little Fish, which was a small business where people paid for comic book education here in San Diego, I realized that one of the things that I couldn't really do was reach a bigger audience because I was so limited by the fact that we had to pay bills each month. And so we had to really cater towards people who were paying, but it also meant I had to turn people away who needed it, who might have had promises artists, but they couldn't pay. Whereas this project I see as being much more global, globally minded and globally targeted. And I think once we can show we're reaching those global things, I mean, luckily my other background is that I'm working in a nonprofit charter school for the last 5 years, and I've seen grant money come through, and I know how to get grants. I've worked with organizations like Teach with Africa and in different places worldwide, and I really want to partner with those organizations to see how can comic books, how can our curriculum and the things that we're creating actually go towards in those places, in places that aren't just American-centric.
Oh, wow.
That's
really
fantastic.
Cool.
I guess, really great.
So what are your thoughts as far as, you know, getting sort of past yourself to be able to, like, make your own comic? You see what I'm saying? Like, getting the artist getting out of their own way, because I know that sometimes, and I'm just speaking from personal experience, and I've spoken to other people too, that tends to be my problem, which is like self-critiquing or being really hard on yourself, and you know what I mean, or just like, say, dealing with the challenges of which I know now are kind of small, but of the internet. Like, if you want to create a webcomic and you don't know jack about WordPress or, you know, web hosting or any of that. I mean, I had to learn all that stuff by myself. And there were definitely times where I was like wanting to pull my hair out. Like, what the hell, code? You know, I was just ready to lose it. So what kind of, I mean, will you have stuff like that on the site? Like, I guess, maybe therapy for the artist?
Well, the other thing that I've been working on is these things called massive open online classes. During the first year, we're going to be creating a lot of prescriptive, like, articles and tutorials. By the end of the first year, I want to launch an academy for students to sign up to classes that's free for everybody to take. But you come in and you take a six-week course on, say, developing a webcomic. And what's cool about that is you're not just getting then the tutorials and the articles based around that subject. You're also getting to connect with other people who are in the same boat as you, because you're going to be taking these online, and they'll be using things like Google Plus communities or Facebook pages, Facebook groups, and people can collaborate and answer questions. Hey, I got stuck on question one. Like, does anybody know the answer? And like, you have an instant community of people who are all in the same boat and trying to figure that out. And that's really exciting, because I do believe that art in and of itself is something that needs community and collaboration more than, say, math does, because math tends to have right answers. And there's like, my brain needs to figure out this right answer. Where in art, everyone's trying to be original, which also means we're all in the same boat together. But it's been really hard to connect with people who are at the same level as you are when you go into online communities for artists right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that that's sort of been, even like, say, classes that have been offered through my job and stuff. Like, let's say I was taking like a Flash animation class just because I wanted to brush up, and you end up in a class with like a bunch of people who don't know anything about it, and you're sort of like, well, no, this was supposed to be like Flash 2, and why are we going over the basics? You know, I mean, that definitely can be a challenge, is like sort of hooking up with a group of people that you see as your own peers and right, kind of at your level.
Well, and that's what's been exciting is in the collegiate realm right now, like UC Berkeley, MIT, Harvard have launched a lot of funding into these massive open online courses. And a lot of people have criticisms with them, and a lot of people have pluses with them. But what I think is amazing about them is that it's online learning. It's free in content from being shielded by proprietary software, so like paywalls and stuff, and it's giving it to everybody in the world, which also means that the people who really want it now have access to it, despite their ability to pay for it or not. Which means, like, if you have a comic book idea about a rabbit who joins a circus, and there's another guy who has a comic book about a turtle who's running away from home, and they're both in the same kind of style, you guys can now find each other in the world. And support each other in your endeavors, as opposed to learning about each other years after you've been struggling with the same problems and never knew each other.
Oh, wow.
I think that's a great, you know, I'm glad that that's on your radar, because there's a lot of, you know, you can like, there's the Jessica Abel and Madden's Mastering Comics, and, you know, there's like a lot of books that you can read, or online articles you can read, and resources, which are fantastic and valuable, extremely valuable. But I think there is something to be said for learning from your peers, and also being able to bring your own particular issues and struggles and insecurities and what, you know, whatever it may be, to the table and actually having a dialogue instead of sort of reading a one-way article.
Yeah, I mean, the Google Hangout thing seems like very cool, because I would imagine that you could have a bit of a two-way street with somebody. Like if they were having a problem with something, you know, they could pipe up, or you know, you could take questions or that sort of thing. That's the bit of exciting. You know, that's what intrigued me. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. No, and it's, you know, I started through Little Fish, I started these Google Hangouts on Air, which were monthly broadcasts from the studio on different topics. And I teamed up with some partners at Google to start connecting with and create. That's how I actually met Jason Brubaker originally, was through Google Hangout on Air. And what was so amazing about connecting to other people who create comic books for me was that I went through years of my life navigating this world thinking I was the only person who thought the way that I did. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I'm connecting with these people all over the world who think like I do. And it's like we become friends, like we've known each other forever because we're talking the same language. It's amazing. And I want to give that to people. Like I really do, because I'm like, I shouldn't be able to keep all of that to myself. that's not cool. You know, like I'd love it if people could not feel alone a little bit more in their life.
Well, so, what about the sort of challenges that somebody might face? Like I know sometimes people are off put by say digital software, you know, like, needing to have Photoshop, you know, quote unquote needing, you know what I mean? Or even, you know, something that I ran into this weekend, I went to the art supply store because I wanted to, you know, my biggest thing is my inking. You know, I hate my inking. I can't stand my inking. I hate it. I hate it. You know, I like working with pencils. I love messing around with markers. But for some reason, like my inking, I can't stand it. So I finally pulled off my shelf like the DC Comics Guide to Inking. I was like, I'm going to read this. I'm going to start going through it. So I went to the art supply store. And, you know, I mean, stuff gets expensive, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the Sable brushes. And then, you know, here's a couple of nibs, and then you want a holder, and then, you know, the markers and the pens. I mean, things can get expensive. What are your thoughts regarding that? Like, I mean...
Well, I think when you're talking... Well, especially because, you know, going back to the root of what you're talking about, DC Guides to comic creation, you're having to create comics in a very narrow mindset. I've spent most of my life studying where these art assumptions come from. And for instance, DC is still working in a method. I mean, I'll give DC props. Think of Fiona Staples, right? Fiona Staples works on Saga and doesn't do anything by hand at all. Like, she's doing everything digitally. Does that mean it has to be the standard for what she's doing? No. I mean, DC Comics Guide to Inking was written by Klaus Janson, who I got the wonderful opportunity to spend a workshop with this summer and co-teach with him. And he's amazing. But he's from a time, too, when inking was done in a very specific manner and was done for a very specific result. We need to study that. Why? Because, like, it's beautiful work. Like, it's gorgeous work, and you need to study it. But study it with the lens of how do you adapt it for now, not how do you master what he was trying to do for when he was creating comics. And I think that conversation is always going to need to be had, of, like, what is the purpose of the art you're learning, and where is it going? And not enough people are talking about that, especially in the art education realm of things, because it's a lot of prescriptive art, and not a lot of people wanting to struggle with that originality factor of how do you use the tools that are around you. And part of me getting a tattoo on my arm and drawing on it was me kind of saying to the world, see, I can make a comic book out of anything.
Huh. So, I mean, it sounds like, it's funny because I just bought my daughter this old CD called Free to Be You and Me. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this thing, but it's a lot of songs about, like, you know, you can be yourself. One of the songs is, like, it's okay to cry, you know. I'm just coming at this from my perspective, and it sounds like kind of what you're saying is that we've come to a time in comics where you should just embrace your own style and maybe stop trying to mimic, or mimic is too derogatory a word, like clone, that's too harsh, but you know, stop trying derive. To be something yeah. else, you know what I'm yeah. saying?
Yeah, I think it's like jazz, you know, like yeah. I think we're in the jazz age of the art form, all art forms. It's not just comics, this is everywhere. I mean, think of Skrillex, right? You know, we're in the jazz age of mixing things up, and I think that it has to do with the fact that we've come to an era of accessibility mm-hmm. to craft and creation, and we now don't have excuses for not mastering something as well as not creating something new. The bar has been set much higher, I guess, is the my point.
But what would you see as mastering something? I guess that's sort of my question. What are, you know what I mean? Because to some people that's different than others. Like, again, I've met artists, you know, who I won't name, who are professionals, and they'll look at, you know, I'm not going to lie, they'll maybe look at my work, or they'll look at somebody else's work. They'll look at manga, you know what I'm saying? And,
right. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I love, and I'm like, this stuff looks beautiful, but they're like, ugh, come on, that's not, you know, I mean, it's, and to me, I'm like, specifically, you know, I'm like, this looks gorgeous, and just because she's got big eyes and a huge head, you know what I mean, it's just right. a different style. So it's just maybe it's a bit of like plugging into your own audience. I mean, what in your idea is mastering comics or mastering your own technique? Like, what
I think mastery is a combination of a couple different elements. One is being able to sustain a lifestyle on the thing that you're practicing as an art form. I think another thing is on a basic level, I'm a purist when it comes to what comic books are, in the sense of what Scott McCloud defined them as, sequential images mixed with words. You know, like there is something right there that comic books are. When I moved from the woods in New Hampshire 5 years ago out to San Diego, I'd never even really been to a comic book convention. And wow. San Diego Comic Con was my first. And I was blown away because I walked down an aisle and I saw Rob Liefeld and I saw Jim Lee and all these guys I grew up reading about Wizard Magazine. They were like sure. real people, you know? And I was like, holy crap. Like, and that quickly wore off. I was working with a group of students who were, I worked at a Title I school district in Southern California for the last 5 years, and I started an after-school graphic novel project where the kids were designing their own comic books, and then I was taking them to conventions. We got booths at Comic-Con for 3 years in a row. We presented on panels, and we sold our comic books. And I was teaching them marketing and sales and how to do inventory and how to plan an art project from conception all the way to like putting it in the consumer's hands. Hmm. Now, when we were doing that, I can definitely tell you I was not as impressed with I mean, I love Marvel. I just did a pitch for a Marvel comic book like 2 months ago, so like I'm never gonna be like a bad, like diss people like that. But I can definitely tell you I stopped buying monthly comic books about a year and a half ago for the first time in 15 years because I started going to these comic conventions, and I go to them regularly now, and I started talking to independent comic creators, people like Craig Thompson, who like literally craft an entire comic book idea from start to finish and do everything themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy is a master.
Sure.
Like, no one can deny that he's a master. And I look, that's the direction of mastery that I tend to biasedly look in these days. Because I'm looking at people who can embrace all aspects of the field, not just their niche that they're really good at. Which may be inking or penciling or writing. Those guys are great. I love Mark Wade. I love, you know,
yeah, yeah.
Like I love my guys. Like I love Marvel Comics.
And that's the thing too, is that I don't know. Sometimes I definitely myself, I love all the indie stuff too, but there's definitely some kind of addiction in me where I'll be on Amazon or in a comic shop, and I'll be like, oh, there's a Marvel trade and I might want to go over, you know what, it's like, yeah. But there's a big desire for
mine's on Comixology. I'll be like flipping around on the
I can't do Comixology.
I have to read that new comic.
I can't do Comixology. I'm not paying $4 for a
I don't go to comic book stores anymore. You know why? It's because they only carry Diamond distributed work.
Yeah.
For the most part. I mean, not all comic stores. Mark Waid just opened Alter Ego with Christina Blanche, and they're good friends of mine, and I really want to make my way up to Indiana to go to their comic book store. But, you know, down here in San Diego, there's like 13 comic book shops, and out of them, there's like 4 good ones.
Yeah.
And here's my thing. I was working with these kids who were like in 9th grade, right? And I'm having to tell them what comic books are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they don't know, because they've been reading maybe manga that they got for free online, or comic books that they've been giving, Calvin and Hobbes or whatever. Sure. They don't know. And so they're looking at me and saying, how can we create a successful comic book? And not like in 10 years. Like, yeah. They're doing it like right now. Like, how can we do it right now? And I was given the freedom by my administrators to teach them how to do it right now. I basically ran like kind of a little sweatshop, comic book sweatshop, like out of my classroom. And when you're doing that, man, you can't look to Marvel and be like, that's realistic, guys. Like, you can't be like, you can't use them as a model of like what is realistic.
Sure. 'Cause
they're like the record labels.
Yeah.
I mean, Marvel's comic book sales between now and like 1990 have plummeted so poorly. Like, I mean, what are they putting out, like 50 some odd issues of comic books a month? They're selling around 60 to 200,000. In the early 90s, they were selling above 500,000 easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, Superman 1950, 1940, 52 is selling at 2 million issues.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that is a whole other ball of wax. I mean, what has happened with print and, you know, online, like that's a whole other conversation. I mean, I remember talking to a comic shop owner, maybe it was somebody else, like in the 90s when Marvel wasn't doing so well, and there was actually rumors that like Chase or some bank might, you know, they might go into bankruptcy and they might actually take like the trademarks of all the Marvel characters, and you know, there were rumors of like they might auction them off, and you know, this is when Marvel was like really down in the dumps, and you know, obviously much different than they are now, you know, a multi-billion dollar, you know, film media machine, you know.
Yeah.
And but I remember somebody saying like, well, if Marvel folds up, what's going to happen to all the comics will disappear? And I was like, no, you know, that's I don't think that is ever going to happen, where like comic books would disappear, you know. I just think
tell that to R. Crumb.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly.
Tell R. Crumb that comics are going to disappear.
But I think that in the general public, you know, the perception is that comics are superhero stuff or manga stuff, like you said, because there was sort of that manga revolution like 10 years ago, right? Before the quote-unquote implosion. But, I mean, well, just to let you know how far things have gone, I mean, there are after-school classes at my daughter's school. She's in first grade. You know, this is elementary school. And they just, one of the classes was manga and comic book making.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I was like, I couldn't believe it, and I so wanted my daughter to sign up for it, but she wanted to take singing instead, so what am I going to do? But, yeah, I mean, I really think that what you're pursuing is really amazing. What are some of the books that you're interested in? I mean, what are some of the graphic novels that really inspired you?
Oh, for sure. Like, my top two are Preacher and Watchmen, definitely.
Oh, good choices.
I was 14 when I read both of those. I was 13. I was probably not the right age to read.
Wait, how old are you?
I'm 30 now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I would have been, yeah.
But like, definitely those, I just remember, I mean, I remember vividly reading Watchmen for the first time because I skimmed through all the boring parts. Like, and I was like, and I got to the end where, you know, spoiler alert, like giant squid, like blows up the city. And I was like, I don't know what the hell's going on in this comic, but I got to read it again. So I,
that's great.
I was like, something amazing just occurred, you know? And like, I remember, but I also remember reading Calvin and Hobbes when I was, you know, 5 and 6. And I remember reading the political cartoons in the Newsweek that my parents used to get. And I always just had this inner thing where like the pictures and words made sense to me. Much in the way that, you know, my Spanish, my one of my best friends is a Spanish teacher, and she's like, you know, I speak English fluently, but I think in Spanish.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think in comics. Like, that's how I, you
know? Oh, that's so interesting. Wow, that's cool. Like, and so what is your sort of your own personal greatest challenge as far as making your own comics? Like, what has that been?
The demons, the demons. I have a very logical mind, so I've in the past 5 years I've been really good at getting work done on systems. I like designing systems because it's like solving a puzzle for me. Comic books require so much ephemeral, like spirituality, the things that are there's no right answer to. Like, what's the next panel? You know, like, what's going to make this story sell? Those kind of things. That's been hard for me. And it was crippling for most of the time I was a younger artist. And these days, it's getting a little easier because I worked as a high school teacher. And when you're working as a high school teacher and you're telling a big group of students that they need to get their work done and you're not getting your work done, you learn from that, you know? Or you don't, and you become a high school teacher for the rest of your life. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, it's not so bad.
But I mean, if I stayed a high school teacher, I definitely wouldn't have had time to work on the things that I'm working on now. And I remember my students, working with my students and just needing, telling them that they had to conquer their fears. And it really had an inverse effect on me, war on me. And I know that this next couple of years, if I can make it work, is going to be about making comics for me. Whether I'm successful or not, I have to do it.
Sure. Oh, that's fantastic. Corey, you got any questions? I feel like I'm hogging the conversation.
No, I've just been enjoying. I guess one question I had about going back to the site for a second, you know, just because we've talked so much about, you know, just that community experience and really connecting with others and being on that sort of journey together. Is there going to be a forum or message board or any sort of anything like that?
Yeah, there's going to be two different types of ways of interacting with the site. There's going to be a consumer-based level where you're just kind of like taking all of the cool things that we have to offer and loving them. So I'm a kind of giant social media connoisseur, so I will not be not present in any one of the social medias with my team. So you'll have access to us no matter how you like to talk on the internet. Whether that be through Pinterest or I like Pinterest. It's kind of my favorite one because it's like the goofiest of all of them. But Instagram or Pinterest or Facebook or whatever, we're going to be there. The other way is that soon we're going to be, I mean, we intend on building enough hype around what we're doing that the floodgates of volunteers are going to start pouring in, and we want that. We're planning for that. So at some point, we already have forums set up where you can read about all of our decisions that we've made in the project in the past 5 months. So people can come in and contribute to the conversation. And how do we accomplish this goal of creating a one-stop, you know, resource for all of comic creation? As opposed to like, and having a central hub like that opens itself up for collaboration, especially because we're a nonprofit. We're not looking to compete with Scott McCloud. We're looking to collaborate with Scott McCloud. We're not looking, you know, all of the other great ones. What's her first name? Abel?
Like, yeah, Jessica Abel.
Jessica Abel. We're not looking to compete with the beautiful work that she's done. It's more about I was squinting because the book's like across from me on my bookshelf. I was like, what what does that word say? Yeah. But, you know, I want to collaborate with all of these people because I really, when I'm thinking of kids who are in South Africa that my wife worked with when she was over there, they have limited bandwidth. They have limited access to new and niche things like maybe making comics, the book. But they all have cell phones. These cell phones have become so cheap and widespread. So I'm like, well, they don't care about who was first. They care about getting the literacy that they need to have to tell their own stories in the way that they think about the world, which is much like the way I think about the world through words and pictures. And I'm constantly, like, I really want the forums and the back end to be about people contributing to that. Because it's the common good. Because the other bigger implication of us doing this and successfully pulling it off is propagation of the art form itself. You know, because this is the conversation of how do we keep comic books happening in the world. Mm-hmm. This is my take on it. You get people to keep making them. You know, you make it easy. The comic book industry is long. Since the creation of Superman and since the explosion in popularity of the print comic has created this air of the Wizard of Oz effect where you have the giant green head floating above everybody and it's like, oh, these are so hard to create. And then, you know, you open the curtain, there's a little white man playing with a bunch of gears. But we're in a generation where people want to know how to make things. And I think that I really want to blow that curtain right off and say that we're not going to die from that. In fact, we're going to become stronger.
Well, so because it seemed like before you had kind of strong opinions as far as, you know, Marvel, DC, like the big two side sort of corporate heads. What do you think about like the train of thought that that they're not really comic book companies anymore? They're just multimedia. You know, that the comics may not be as important as they once were, and what's important now are the TV shows, the movies, and all that stuff. And how do you think that that might affect comics in the future? Because, you know, isn't there the concern that a lot of creators might drift towards the larger media that pays more money, like that sort of thing? Like, do you see any kind of troubles down the line as far as, like...
Well, Let's separate some ideas in our head really quick. Marvel and DC are selling franchised and trademarked properties. Spider-Man is not a comic book. He's a concept. Mm-hmm. And whether he comes out in a movie, a comic book, or a cartoon, he's a concept. And they own the concept of Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And they're in the business of promoting that concept. Mm-hmm. Which I can safely say from 15 years of reading Spider-Man comics, like that is definitely one of the primary things going on there. And I know Joe Quesada and I know all those guys like love Spider-Man.
Sure.
Like love him. But at the end of the day, Superior Spider-Man occurs because they need to sell the idea of Spider-Man.
Sure.
Like you kill off Peter Parker because it's and where's the line between that and the soap opera that my mom used to watch during daytime soap?
Well, no, there is no line. I mean, that's the thing that sucked us all in, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Except that that's not comics. Comics are about a language that we speak in. When I talk to comic book artists, they love communicating in that language. It's almost like this geeky little, like when you talk to coders or the guys who created like the MacBook, you know, the original Macintosh back in the day. They just love their language. There's a culture there. And I think that culture is vastly underappreciated, especially in modern culture that's tending to focus on geek chic and the coolness of geeky things. Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you this. That stuff's going to come and go. Geeky stuff is going to be cool, and it's not going to be cool. And it's done it cyclically ever since I've been around. And I don't pay attention to it. I heard an amazing segment on a podcast about the guy who a scientist who works for Big Bang Theory, right? And I was more interested in him than I was in the show.
Yeah. I don't watch that show, so.
right, because it's slightly offensive, right? Like, I mean, it's funny sometimes, but it's pretty like Frasier version of Geek Life.
Yeah, to me, stuff like that is how, I mean, it's weird because it's like they're obviously kind of trying to say like reading comics and being geeky is cool, but it's such a stereotype, mm-hmm. that particular show, that I'm like, no, that's not me, you know? I mean, yeah. That's not who I am. That's not...
You mean you're not a scientist that lives in Pasadena?
No.
<I mean, laughs>
<kind of funny. laughs> you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just like, you know, I don't know. There's so many multifaceted layers to like being a comic book fan, you know, or being a fan of, you know, movies or whatever, TV. And I just look at that, and to me, that's like my cousin, like he likes that show, and he tried to show it to me once, and he's like, oh, you're probably gonna really like it because of the stuff you're into. And I'm like, but this is not speaking to me. This is speaking to you, which has a specific thing in your head, which is what you think I am, but this is not what I am. You know what I mean? Is that too too weird?
Well, no. I think the thing that comes to my mind that's hopeful, though, beyond all of this, is Joss Whedon directing the Avengers.
Uh-huh.
Because however you want to cut or slice that situation down, my mind was freaking blown. The director of Buffy the Vampire Slayer helmed one of the biggest major motion pictures of the last decade.
I knew he had it in him.
You couldn't have told me, though, like, or any one of us, like, 6 years ago.
No. I mean, I wouldn't have believed it.
After the failure of Dollhouse, like, that he was going to be the guy who directs the biggest major motion picture since, what, the Titanic?
Sure. I guess it does have a lot to do with Joss Whedon, because I was going to say, how much does that have to do with Joss Whedon, and how much does that have to do with the anticipation of the Avengers?
I think it's because we're coming to a place where my hope from all of that, I guess the reason why I brought it up, is that we're coming to a place where we appreciate good art.
Uh-huh.
And when you do that, you're going to start looking more towards good art for the source of good art.
Gotcha.
And I think that that's what we're going to be about on the site, is about talking about good art. We're not going to be talking about what's popular. Because I think Wayne Gretzky had the saying of, like, don't look where the puck is, look where the puck is going to be.
Yeah.
And like, to do that, you have to understand how the puck moves across the surface of the ice.
Yeah.
Before you understand anything else.
Yeah.
And I think all the spectators who are up on the bleachers are watching, you know, the flash and sizzle.
Yeah.
I think that there is some eye going towards in the industry, I hope, that's going towards art.
That's a great way of looking at that. And also, I really have to say that your way of looking at the language of comics as being a language is kind of something that I've never really thought about before. I've always thought about it as an art form, or sort of like a craft, or and something that can be very hard to grasp at times. But looking at it as a language is a little bit refreshing in a way. So I have thank you for saying that, because to me that kind of makes me go, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. a different way of looking at it to me that I find like very sort of open-minded, if that's the right phrase. But that's really cool. So, before we go, what are your... I just wanted to ask you, what do you work in? Just like pen and ink, or are you working digitally, or how? What is your work, your personal work process for your comics?
I'm constantly developing, but I think for the next autobiographical comic I'm going to be working in, I'm going to be doing in black and white with brush and ink. I have a Japanese I think it's called a Karataki brush. It's like a $30 like inkwell like brush pen. I love them. They're great. One of my friends who's a comic book artist, Ryan A., he did a comic called Nothing Is Forgotten that was Eisner nominated he got two Eisner nominations the last 2 years wow. of them, and he works completely in them. And I'm just inspired by it because I did a lot of painting from my early 20s, and kind of working with brush and ink has really pushed me. But interestingly, I'm always also pushing my format that I'm working in. So I'm planning on the next comic book I do to come out as an Instagram feed.
Oh, wow.
Completely. So I'm not even developing a website around it. It's only going to be readable on Instagram. And then it'll go to print. But I wanted to do that because it presents some interesting design challenges that I'm kind of and I've just fallen in love with Instagram in the last like 5 months.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
well,
all these other
here's why though. Like, I have connected with so many because of hashtag. I've never had hashtags work on any other social media platform than Instagram. And I post pictures of the process of my work as I'm going through it. Like, I'll put the pencils up, and then I'll put the first layer of inks up. And then I get connected to people all over the world. Like, people, artists who are like, I really love what you're doing. Huh. In different languages. They're like, hey, how's it going? Like, your art is beautiful. I sold some artwork doing that on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, this is like a beeline straight to my people. Like, I was like, this is awesome.
Huh. Instagram. What about Tumblr? Do you have a Tumblr too?
Well, all of my comics currently are hosted on Tumblr. Gotcha. And not on WordPress. And that was just because I enjoy the simplicity of Tumblr more than anything.
Yeah, my problem is I get too caught up in the whiz-bang of stuff. Like, I can do this. Can I do this? Can I do that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, thank you for talking to us, Patrick. Corey, do you have any other questions?
No, thanks for joining us. And I'm very excited to see this launch. And
yeah,
I really,
me too.
We'll be watching closely. Christian knows this. You know, I'm sort of working on a webcomic idea or two, and so I hope to learn some things.
Yes. Yeah, cool. Me too. I mean, I'll definitely be checking it out. I'm always looking for, you know, interesting concepts and interesting ideas. You know, my big weakness is that I feel like I can't break out of wanting to do superheroes because I love them so much, but it's like there's two giant companies that are already doing them really well, so it's like, okay, but yeah, there's room for everything. But Patrick, thank you so much for joining us. What are your two web comics again?
My Arm the Comic and Hipster Picnic. Hipster Picnic's a basically like Perfect Strangers meets 28 Days Later.
Oh my God! Send me the URL as soon as we're done with this.
Okay. I will. Yeah, and so that one's coming out. There's a resurgence of that one coming out because I did it for 2 years and then I dropped the project. But I recently got some interest in it, and it's going to come out on a major syndicate. So I'm very excited.
Oh, that's so great! Good for you. You're in San Diego, right?
Correct.
Oh, okay. Are you ever up in the LA area?
Sometimes. I'm going to be up for Long Beach Comic Con. We're doing the Making Comics crew is going to be at the con this weekend, actually.
Oh, are you doing a panel?
We're at a booth with Eat Geek Play.
Oh, Eat Geek Play. Do you know the booth number?
I don't.
Okay.
Well, they're gonna have like a giant. They have like two booths. I think it's like a big podcast booth. I think it's gonna be hard to miss them.
Oh, okay.
But Eat Geek Play is a big podcast/ geek culture thing. But cool. Another guy I met.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Through all of my chain of things. You know?
Cool. Well, you know, I really hope this goes well. The website is called Making Comics. The Google Plus Hangout on air is December 4th at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And you can get all that information on makingcomics.com. And I mean, you sound like a really great guy, Patrick, and you sound like your heart's in the right place, and I hope it goes really well for you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciated the conversation and getting a really great feedback from you guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, if there's anything that I can do to help, I mean, as Corey knows, I'm always burying myself in like projects, or, you know, I do have a kid too. but you know, anything that I could do to help too, you know, I'd be more than willing to help out. So, you know, cool. It sounds like a really, really great endeavor. So
great. Cool. Thanks.
This has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. I'm Christian Horn with Corey Blake, and we have been talking to Patrick Urich of MakingComics.com. Thanks for doing it, Patrick. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.